cuties. Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your fill-in host, Sean Frelick. You may remember me. And this, of course, is Technori Live podcast on WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. And in a few minutes here, we're going to talk to the co-founders of Fuzzy Math. But before that, we're going to do the traditional feed, where I give you the top tech news. So it's time to dish out top tech news with a bonus slice of weird. You may need a shower after you're done with me. Yahoo is headed towards the door. 21,000 people are being laid off after Verizon bought the troubled tech company. Who will hire all these people? Don't look to Technori. We believe in organic growth. Also, these folks are getting severance packages, so optimistically, they will be able to land on their feet again. Yahoo's issue has been ad revenue, which has been mostly eaten up by the monoliths known as Facebook and Google. I guess I'll have to look elsewhere for celebrity news. Maybe I'll ask our friend Showbiz Shelley. Moving on, there are more job cuts in the media world, folks. It ain't pretty. Grab your umbrella. The ripples of the Verizon deal hit the Huffington Post, which is laying off 40 employees, including Pulitzer Prize winner David Wood, who got HuffPost its only Pulitzer for his writing about life after war. Another victim of the layoffs is tech news site Vocative, which laid off 20 employees as it tries to shift more to video. We got you beat, Vocative. We got the feed and more shows in the pipeline, and Technori is only 4 people. Sadly, the alternating state of media means a lot of people will be getting cut until workable models are discovered that go beyond Instagram memes and Snap stories. Hush, little baby. All media will be owned by oil companies and tech overlords soon. Ha! No. Power to the people, baby. Let's stay strong. Let's localize this a little bit. Yeah, I know you're thinking, hey, Sean, what's this got to do with Chicago? But, you know, just listen. Tech Week is coming back to Chicago with CEO Amanda Signorelli having a year as CEO under her belt. So that's why she's earned this week's very coveted Technori shout-out. Signorelli is maturing Tech Week by reeling in the event to offer more highly produced segments. Attendance is expected to be slimmer this year because part of the cutbacks includes cutting back on some of the partying events, which has led to some negative situations. So stay away, you drunkies. This is about building capital. That's a lot of talk about the changing media landscape, so see some of the faces behind this evolution at June 27th's Technori Showcase event. You'll see my pretty face there. Yes, you can kiss me. All right, so that's it for the feed. Now let's bring things back to the studio. We got our friends here. Let's introduce ourselves. So we got our two co-founders here.
Sure, I'm Mark Baldino.
Mark Ben.
And I'm Ben Inchek.
Welcome, fellas. So I'm excited to talk about Fuzzy Math and the future of augmented reality. So let's start off by just getting the story of Fuzzy Math.
Sure. Yeah, we're a user experience design consultancy, which is kind of maybe what you put on the website. But really, the reason we exist is because there's really not a person that's used a piece of technology that at some point hasn't been really frustrated with that technology.
Oh, yeah.
And so and that could be somebody in your family member who's, you know, technologically not sophisticated, or somebody like, you know, Elon Musk, who is very technologically sophisticated. People encounter problems in their lives using tech and digital software solutions. And so our reason for being is really to get in touch with the people that have to – the humans that have to use software all the time. And we work with our clients to shape their products and services to better meet the needs of those human beings.
So what's your background? How did you get into this work field?
I personally fell into it early on. My undergrad is in theology, so it was kind of a really pure liberal arts. Not really much of a work stream there for me. So I got into the design world and found the niche, which was user experience design, which, you know, wasn't really on the artistic side, but really about problem solving and design. And so I started in D.C. working and then kind of worked my way through a number of companies out there and in Chicago. I met Ben in about 2007. We were working together, and then in 2009 we started up our own consultancy.
And Ben, what's your backstory? How did you get this this stage?
I have a little bit more of a related background, I guess, to the field I'm currently in. When I was in high school, I worked at a startup that had some older friends. This is like 1997, 1998. We sold things that we liked, so we sold paintball guns and skateboards. I didn't know that you could work on the internet for like a living. I come from a family of teachers. And I got hooked. So From there, graduated high school, went to DePaul, got a degree in computer science. My last year, I kind of figured out I didn't really want to do that with my life, so I got a job at DePaul. They paid for my grad school, went and got a degree in human-computer interaction, was working as a developer that entire time. The skills I learned in high school working at the startup. Worked for 5 or 6 years as a developer, quit my job because I was overworked, and lo and behold, that was on a Friday. So on Monday, I met Mark working as a freelancer, and from there, FuzzMath started 2 years later.
Do you any longer feel overworked? Are those? I imagine it might be more.
Yeah, but now it's by choice. So
okay.
It's a little bit different, and I love what I do. I enjoy getting out of bed every day, which is pretty much my only goal in life is to really, I mean, I'm going to do something for roughly 12 hours. I want to make sure I enjoy it, and so far, so good.
Yeah, so we opened up the conversation talking about the issue of people having software issues. Do you have any trouble whatsoever describing to people even what you do as a consultant? Like, it seems like maybe a profession that is so crucial, but maybe a little out there for people to understand.
Yeah, I feel like I should ask you back if you understood kind of how we describe it. I mean, it can get really esoteric and get really into, like, design language.
Yeah.
Which is why we try to level up and say there's humans, they're forced to use software, mostly to get their job done. And we do a lot of work in business-to-business and enterprise solutions, so on the business side of the world as opposed to purely consumer-facing. They're generally given a piece of software. They have to use it. They're unhappy. A lot of the times the people that are building and delivering that software haven't really made a lot of considerations towards that person. And so our process is about sitting down with attorneys, physicians, just regular human beings that are using software and understanding, like, where is it breaking down? And then our biggest job is communicating to our clients, these are the pain points and issues, and here's how you should shift your software moving forward. So, you know, we do a lot of ethnography and research, prototyping and design, but that's kind of the process we apply. What we're really trying to do is empathize with people that have to use software and then give really good recommendations. This is how you make this more usable, more efficient, more satisfying.
Well, in some ways, that doesn't sound too far off from theology. As you're trying
no, it
to it empathy
doesn't.
Plays an important role, I imagine, in both fields.
It does, for sure. Empathy is an interesting, I'll say, tool. Some people have it naturally. They're empathetic. They can understand people and how others emote towards them really easily. And for others, it's a skill. And I think a lot of our designers come through programs like Ben's, but it's really that softer side of empathy that just takes a little bit of time to figure out how can you connect to a human and actually have some understanding. And then when it gets to the business world, how can we then translate that empathy to something that marketing or sales or business professional, somebody in the C-suite can understand, like, okay, now I understand my customers at an empathetic level, at a human level. This is how we should move our product and service to meet their need.
Well, this sounds like a perfect segue to get to what the heart of this interview is supposed to be about. Augmented reality. So how does that fit into the FuzzMath equation?
Well, it fits in pretty well. We, as I mentioned, we work in, like, business-to-business and enterprise environments. And we live at this sort of overlap between people, data and process and technology. And we like these ecosystems. We do a lot of work in healthcare, financial services, education. And AR is a really interesting space because if you look at trends in technology, for the past few years, like, data and big data has been a big focus. We now have the Internet of Things. We have devices out there capturing reams and reams of data, or people have historical reams of data. I'm trying to figure out what do we do with all of this?
Right.
And so the big data has kind of made large advances in the past few years. And then you have technological advances. There's consumer-facing devices that are in VR and AR, but – you know, where we're sort of interested is kind of really on the enterprise level. And so you have technological steps forwards, companies like Daiquiri, which make helmets for the workforce. You've had this technological shift, which is computing processing power. And when you sort of overlap this high level of data and these technological advances, you really have kind of an interesting ecosystem there. And obviously humans have to use this. And so we think it really plays across a number of areas that we're already in, and we're starting to see our clients kind of moving there.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting parts of user experience design to me, like, my personal interest is in context, that we're designing software for somebody doing a task.
Mm-hmm.
We really care about that moment in time. And all of those things Mark just mentioned with taking technology and, you know, advances make cameras smaller and make sensors smaller, which we can actually get things. Our phones are more powerful than the computers that sent the spaceship to the moon. We have that in our pocket, and it has cameras and all these other things on it. And then we can take the Internet of Things, this huge warehouse of data, and AR is the thing that brings that all together in the context that it's needed. So from just a pure interest in what we do, AR is the thing that pulls all those together, and it's just like beyond exciting to be able to work in it. It's the future of where we're going, I think.
So how do you think AR can affect, as you made the great example of our smartphones and the power they've gained, how do you see AR affecting the average Joe or Joanne on the day-to-day basis going ahead?
Day-to-day person, I think it's going to happen. I think there are really good examples in our life today. The backup cameras in cars, more and more common that you see those. That, to me, that's a great example of augmented reality that's making people's lives better. That we don't, you know, there's hopefully less backing in accidents, that you can see what's going on behind you without having to totally shift your physical person. I think those small little nuggets are going to be great. I think from a fuzzy math and from a business point of view, how it's going to be used in the enterprise is more of our, like, that's how we make our money, and I think that's more along the lines of the clients that we work with. I think that's where the biggest advantages are coming. People have been thinking about this for a really long time, and now technology is catching up to the point with companies like Daiquiri that Mark just mentioned are providing a service that's actually real, that is, it feels like the future, but it's actually here now. And I think that's where, at least in my head, that's the part I'm a little bit more interested in.
Yeah, I think there's a number of applications in engineering, architecture, which are more business environments, where you're going to start to see a push, or already have started to see, like what we say, real world scenarios where somebody has a task or a job, and by creating a digital overlay in front of them, it makes that job more efficient, and in many cases it makes that job a heck of a lot safer, or when they're doing on the job training, it just makes that an easier training position. So I think early on, people are always trying to figure out, like, what's the consumer application for AR? So you see something like Pokemon Go. Apple is doing a joint project with IKEA where you can use your phone. You can get an overlay of what a piece of furniture would look like in a space. Like, I think there's a lot of fun, interesting components there. But we have the market starting to show that putting a helmet on an engineer in a building, and instead of and they have the data of where conduit is in their system, it's fed to their helmet, and they can see through a wall, is like a really aha moment for people, and that's a really impactful experience. And so it helps people do a job much more efficient, and in a lot of cases, a lot safer.
So, how long do you think it'll take before AR is incredibly commonplace? Like, what is the trajectory here?
I mean, the trajectory in business is moving really, really quickly. As Ben mentioned, people who've wanted to have AR in their workplace, if there's a manufacturing line, right? You have data, you have machines, or you have computers. People are context switching. Ben mentioned context. Maybe now I'm at the point where I'm looking at a tablet versus being in a physical computer on a assembly line or something like that. You're going to see advances really, really quickly. The technology is there that we can feed data to something like a helmet really, really quickly. On the consumer side, I would be a lot more cautious. I think that the applications, something like in-car dash overlays into screens, very common usage. But people walking around with glasses that are augmenting their reality, I think is probably looking at 5 to 10 years before it becomes a little bit more ubiquitous. There has to be a real need outside of a game, which if you look at something like VR, which is a fully immersive experience, like gaming, distance learning, there's a lot of interesting programs with the elderly, like taking trips in VR experiences. Like I think those are applicable. We'll see some movement there. But on the AR side, there has to be a real sort of outside of a game, there has to be a real need, and so it's going to take a while for us to get there on the consumer side.
I have a little bit more of a generalized question, because I think a lot of people may not know the difference between AR and VR, so let's spell that out. Sure. What is it?
Yes, augmented reality is going to be taking the physical space that you're in and adding a layer of data to it. So it could, if you're, you know, I'm going to keep going back to business ideas, if you're working on an assembly line, you could be wearing a helmet and it can highlight a specific part for you that you're looking for, a certain type of screw or widget 1 instead of widget 2, and it can actually highlight via a lens in front of your eyes which one is which. Virtual reality, you are in a space, but you put something on yourself, and it completely transfers you to a different world. So you could be on your couch, but everything you see and hear and experience could be on a beach in Hawaii. So it's the is it, are you seeing something that's real life with additional things on top of it, versus are you kind of taking yourself and going to a far distant land through a virtual experience?
So in regards to adopting these AR technologies on the business side of things, what are some of the educational paths you have to take for, or in other words, what kind of hurdles do you have to help get people get over, or if there even are hurdles, is this easy? Is this an easy thing to adopt in your experience?
I mean, what we're seeing in the market and from some of our clients is they kind of want to know what's possible. So this is, we're really early in, you know, it's really kind of a early part of this industry, and we see that kind of growing over time. But so what they're trying to figure out is where can we apply this technology and what does that look like? And so we're doing ethnography and research and kind of visioning pieces at this point. Here's your current work process. Here's the people that work in your environment, and here's how you could use some of these applications. And then it's more, you know, they're trying to build a case in internally. There are some industries which it's pretty obvious. I think engineering, we've mentioned some other industries where it's like really obvious that there's a need here. And so there aren't as many hurdles. They usually, people are already using technology, right?
Yeah.
And they're already, you know, computers have been augmenting our experience for 50 some odd years. This is a much simpler, more unobtrusive way to do it, because it's giving you an overlay on your experience in an environment that feels natural. If you look at somebody like a welder, very complicated, high learning curve, you're already wearing a helmet, right? You're in this environment, it's pretty difficult. For them to switch, context switch to a physical device is almost impossible. But if you're training a welder and you have an overlay of information and somebody's guiding this person in real time, that's where an actual training and learning curve can be really undercut. So there's a lot of industries where it's sort of like the environmental factors are already there for them to be wearing helmets and then the overlays, and then there's a natural fit of kind of need there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the things that make it incredibly powerful for businesses is one of the reasons it's a little less likely to succeed immediately with private life and in public life of security concerns, privacy concerns, of what information. If I, like Google Glass ran into this, which is a great example of an augmented reality, of what information about somebody else can I tell about them just because Google Glass can tell who that is? And there's a lot of just privacy concerns of people walking around versus somebody in a business setting. His part of the job is you have to wear this thing, and we're going to show you information relevant to your business process, and there's not too many privacy concerns there. So that's one of the reasons we think business is going to take the first step, or they're already taking the first step, now they're going to take the next 20, and the general person might be more prone to see it in their car than they will in a true augmented like helmet in the near future.
Mm-hmm. And beyond, we talked about the consumer side and the business side. Do you see AUG, AR, and the different models that you work with moving into the educational space as well and being adopted by schools and universities and that such?
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of really cool YouTube videos you can watch of medical students looking at a skeleton with an augmented reality helmet on and being told how muscles work and how the organs work without actually having to dissect a cadaver or you know, do some of the physical things that they still have to do, but the augmented reality can really speed up the teaching process when everybody can see the same thing right in front of them with a teacher in their ear explaining what's going on with a body system or something like that. It's the level of, if you can think about it, you can probably do it, is much more real today than it's ever been before. And I think a lot of these things have been conceptual of like, wouldn't it be cool? And now it's, wouldn't it be cool? And try this thing on and go check it out.
Yeah, so you guys, I can sense that you're jazzed about this. So let's expound on that a little bit. Like, what are you most excited about in this field?
I think the fact that we can get people, in certain cases, away from screens and physical interfaces and, I mean, as the term is, augment their reality to – maybe sounds it doesn't sound that exciting to certain people. For us, enabling the workforce to be safer and more efficient, creating more enjoyable experiences is pretty exciting, and I think that's what augmented reality really offers for people.
Yeah, that context is just, it's just cool to me. I love this stuff. I think taking all of this data and helping people do something better and making their life a little bit easier, or a little bit making their job a little bit easier is like truly interesting and truly exciting to me. I think this is one of the few things in my design career in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years where you can see something and be like, wow, that's the future, but it isn't. It's actually real, and you can touch it and you can use it, and it's not a hologram somewhere. It's, you can go to to a conference. There was a big AR conference like 2 weeks ago, and you could actually put on a helmet and play with it in real life. And it is absolutely the future when you experience it, but it's already here. And that I don't think those things come that often. And a lot of the ones that have come in the last couple of years kind of fizzled out or like chatbots. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they work that well. This is a true tangible thing that is the future, but it's actually here.
Right. And unlike Pokemon Go, which, you know, lit the world on fire for a few months,
Yeah. Obviously
these examples that you've posed are going to be installed and not going to be going anywhere. I can't see these things once they're adopted by these businesses being thrown away like Pokemon Go was.
Right.
So I really do agree with you that it really does seem like a future is here moment. So thanks so much for coming in and teaching our listeners more about AR. So if they want to learn more, where can they go?
They can go to fuzzymath.com and read up or contact Ben or I directly. We sort of love to talk to people about what we're doing and share our knowledge on sort of AR and UX design.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Watch this episode and more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori or follow me at Freilich Sean. Stick a fork in it. This dish is done.